found only along Lur's savage east coast, where it clung precariously to life along the barren cliff tops, just one of many unique Ulcan plants. Without magic, their healers relied on natural remedies, and for that he was profoundly grateful. Like it or not, and most Doranan abhorred it, magic could only do so much. Ulcan herb lore had saved many a Doranan life, and praise Baal for it. In the bed beside him, wasted and wan, Derm shifted, sighing. Nix glanced up, anxious, but it was dreaming only. No new fit or seizure. He released a grateful breath. Praise Baal for herb lore indeed. He thought it was the only thing keeping Derm alive, for his healing magics had long since reached their limits. Derm stirred and sighed again, bald head rolling on the pillow. Nix reached out an absent-minded hand, intending to check his patient's pulse. Derm's fingers curled around his own.
"Baal, save me!"
cried Nix, and leaped to his feet. Derm's eyes were open, unfocused, but open.
"Carol! Carol, to me!"
The chamber door flew open, and Carol practically fell into the room.
"Sir, are you?"
"He's awake. Baal be blessed, he's awake. Fetch me a wet cloth, quickly."
As Carol fled, Nix sought the pulse point in Derm's throat. It thrummed beneath his fingertips, fast but strong.
"No,"
said Derm, struggling to speak.
"Hush, hush," he soothed. "You're safe, man. Lie still."
Despite their best endeavors, Derm's lips were dry and chapped with flaking skin. When Carol returned, followed by the inevitable gaggle of colleagues, Nix took the cloth she handed him and pressed its wetness to the master magician's mouth. At its touch, Derm's gaze sharpened. Breathing harshly, he tried to sit up. Nix restrained him.
"No, Derm, no! You must stay still!"
Derm frowned, tugging his scars into tangled new shapes, and his lips framed soundless words. He stared around the healing chamber, searching for something or someone.
"Born,"
he gasped, his voice harsh, guttural.
"Born."
Tears leaked from his bloodshot eyes.
"Somebody fetch the king," said Nix.
As Carol bolted, scattering pothers like so many skittlepins, Derm spoke again.
"Nix! Nix, help me!"
"I'm trying,"
Nix told him, and felt tears of joy, of shock, pricking his own eyes.
"But you must lie still!"
Derm shuddered, a mighty convulsion that lifted his shoulders from the mattress. His eyes opened wide, and his mouth, and the most extraordinary expression of triumph and ecstasy and virulent relief washed over his face.
"Awake!"
he roared.
At last, awake!"
"Yes, awake, but poorly yet," said Nix. "You must..."
"Let me up,"
Derm demanded, and struggled to throw aside his blankets.
"I have wasted too much time here. I have spent more of myself than I can spare healing this rotten carcass. Let me up, I say, or be blighted where you..."
Heedless of newly knitted flesh and bone, Nix threw himself across Derm's chest.
"Fetch me Ebonard, now!"
As someone scuttled to do his bidding, he spread his right hand flat and pressed it against Derm's thundering heart.
"Quantiasat! Boladusit!"
It was a calming invocation, useful when a patient was conscious but agitated.
"Boladusit, Derm! Baal curse you with hives! Be still!"
The invocation caught, and Derm flopped back against his pillows. Somebody thrust a vial of Ebonard into Nix's hand. He tossed the contents into Derm's gaping mouth and slammed closed his jaw for good measure. Derm swallowed, gagged, snorted. His staring eyes rolled. fogged, and a foolish smile melted over his face. Nick sagged, then turned to scowl at his goggling underlings.
"Be off with you! His Majesty will arrive soon!"
But it wasn't the king who answered his summons.
"What's amiss?"
demanded Asher, striding into the sick man's chamber as though he owned it. Nick, staring, remembered the rough-spun young Olkin he'd once treated for a split eyebrow, and thought he'd not have achieved a more perfect transformation with magic. He stood.
"I requested His Majesty's presence."
"His Majesty ain't available. Why do you need him?"
In the bed between them, momentarily forgotten, Derm shifted and sighed and said,
"Born."
"He's awake?" said Asher, incredulous.
Nick smiled.
"Awake, and seemingly with all his faculties."
Still staring at the recovered Master Magician, Asher said,
"I'll fetch the king,"
and left as abruptly as he'd arrived. Nearly half an hour later he returned, this time accompanied by His Majesty. Gar looked worn to the nub and ripe for dropping. Not surprising, perhaps, since he'd interred his family only yesterday. Still, Nix bowed.
"Your Majesty."
Gar barely acknowledged him, pushed straight past and dropped into the chair beside Derm's bed, snatched up Derm's fleshless hand and pressed it to his lips.
Derm, I'm here."
When Derm didn't respond, Gar looked up, displeasure unhidden.
"What is this? You said he was awake!"
Nix exchanged a glance with Asher and cleared his throat.
"He became agitated, sir. I was forced to gentle him with Ebonard. He'll stir again presently, I'm sure."
Unmollified, Gar turned back to Derm.
"You had no business drugging him, Nix. You know I need him alert and..."
In the bed, Derm sighed, stirred, dragged his eyelids open.
What?
Breathing hard, Gar leaned close.
"Praise Baal. Derm, can you hear me? Do you know me?"
Derm smiled into Gar's anxious, waiting face.
"Of course,"
he said. His voice was soft and slurring.
"You're crippled, Gar. Born's runting, regrettable offspring."
Nick stepped forward.
"Ebonard is a powerful soporific, sir, and oft tickles the tongue to unfortunate utterances. It would be unwise to..."
Gar's face was bleached of blood.
"You think I'd hold a sick man's words against him?"
Another exchange of glances with Asher. This time the king's friend frowned and shook his head. Nix abandoned remonstrance.
"Of course not, Your Majesty."
Derm stirred again, querulous now.
"Born? Where is Born?"
Subdued, Gar leaned close.
"He can't be here at the moment, but he sends you his love."
Derm smiled.
"Born, my friend, give my love to him. Tell him I shall see him soon."
He sighed and slid again into sleep. Gar released Derm's hand, stood, and moved to the window.
"He has no memory of the accident?"
"It's too soon to say for certain," replied Nix. "But given his injuries, likely not. Once he's strong enough, I'll..."
"No, I will tell him."
"As Your Majesty desires."
"How soon before he can return to his duties?"
Nix hesitated. Everything about this grieving young man urged caution.
"Sir, it's a miracle Derm lives at all. Perhaps it's not wise for us to look too far into the future."
Gar glanced over his shoulder, a cold look.
"You know I need him, Nix."
Caution was all very well, but he'd not be bullied into harming a patient, not even by a king.
"I know that whatever your needs may be, Your Majesty, Derm's will always come first."
"The king knows that," said Asher.
His tone was conversational, his eyes sharp.
"Just do your best, eh? to bring Derm about as fast as possible. That's all we're asking.
We? Nyx felt the faintest stirring of unease.
Your Majesty?
Gar turned.
That's right. Of course you must protect his health. Protect, but not coddle. I'm asking for him as much as myself, Nyx. Derm is not an idle man. He'll heal faster knowing there's work to be done, knowing he's needed.
It was a fair observation. Still, Nyx felt unsettled. Some new stress was carved into Gar's face. Something apart from weatherworking.
To be sure. And how does your Majesty? You seem to me a trifle peaked.
I'm fine.
To satisfy himself, Nyx reached for Gar's wrist and laid a palm to his forehead. The king suffered his swift, impersonal touches with a thinly veiled impatience. When he was done, and grudgingly satisfied, Nyx retreated.
You should rest more. I warned you these first weeks of weatherworking will break you if you let them.
I'm fine, I told you, Gar snapped. Save your energies for Derm.
He risked a smile.
I have enough energy for both of you, sir.
Gar stepped forward, furious.
You think this amusing?
Majesty, no, I...
Heal him, Nyx, or I'll not be answerable for the consequences.
Shaken, Nyx watched him leave, frowned, affronted, as Asher on the king's heels gave him a look of filthy disgust. In his bed, Derm slept on, smiling like a babe. Conroy Geralt was in his bath when the message arrived. Derm has woken and is in his right mind. So great were his rage and disappointment that the cooling water began to bubble with heat, and he had to leap out naked before he scalded himself.
Tell Frawley to wait in the library, he told the flustered maidservant. I'll see him directly.
Sir,
she gasped, and fled. He wrapped himself in a rich brocade robe, dried, and ordered his hair with an impatient finger snap, then descended the stairs to meet with his henchmen.
My lord, said Frawley, bowing low.
Wrapped in his customary grey cloak, hat pulled low to his forehead, he looked, as ever, usefully nondescript.
Our fat friend sent you a note, I take it?
Frawley shook his head.
No, sir. He tracked me down to the Whistling Pig and accosted me in the privy. Were you observed?
Frawley looked hurt.
My lord.
He couldn't care less about Frawley's feelings.
Is that all he said?
Yes, my lord. Geralt sat at his desk and drummed his fingers.
Willa is laggardly in his task.
I did mention you were eagerly awaiting good news, my lord, said Frawley. Uneasy now, he pulled off his hat and let his fingers nibble at the brim.
I made a point of telling him. I think it's time he was reminded of his mission's urgency, said Geralt. Where is he now?
His lodgings, most like, sir, this time of night.
Find him. Escort him to the west gate of the city Barl's Garden. I will meet you there.
My lord, said Frawley, and took his leave. Aetean was amusing herself at her spinet in the music room.
I'm going for a walk, Geralt told her.
A walk?
She said, astonished. Mercifully, she stopped playing and stared at him as though he'd sprouted wings.
At this hour? But you've just had your bath.
Please don't distress yourself in staying up till I return. I feel a trifle restless this evening. I might well walk for some time.
She stretched out a hand to him.
Oh, Conroyd, are you still so very sad?
We live in sad times, my dear.
For many reasons, and one more just added to the list.
But you got over loving Dana years ago, she said, pouting just a little. And you never had a fondness for Bourne, not as a man, I mean. As our king, of course, you revered him, as did we all.
She'd have to know sooner or later.
Derm has woken. I just received word.
And now his second best wife understood.
Oh, Conroyd!
Yes,
he said softly, and indulged in the thinnest of smiles. Aitian rallied.
We cannot despair, she announced, rising from her music stool. Awake is one thing. Unimpaired and able to function as the master magician is quite another. My dear, do not abandon hope. You will be master magician one day, I know it.
She had no idea of his true ambition, of course. He would never dream of confiding in a woman like her. She was challenged enough to keep her mouth shut on his supposed desire to take Derm's inferior place at Gar's side. He shrugged.
Whatever happens, it will be according to Baal's will.
Flushing, she fingered the holy medal on its chain around her neck.
Of course.
Pray, continue with your music-making, my dear,
he added, nodding at the spinet.
And I shall see you in the morning at breakfast.
He escaped her enthusiastic butchery of a popular dance tune and exchanged brocade robe and slippers for sober-hued tunic, trousers, and boots. Muffled in a black cloak with a low-brimmed hat to encourage concealing shadows, he left his townhouse and made his brisk way out of the exclusive Old Dorana residential district and towards the city Baal's garden. The night was clear, with no rain set to fall. According to the current weather schedule, Bourne's last, there'd be no rain in the city for another 5 days. The temperature was due to start dropping, though. Gar would need to take care of that soon, or the River Gant wouldn't freeze over and there'd be no skating parties. He'd not stay popular long if that annual delight was unforthcoming. The idea made him smile. Amusement faded swiftly, however. His window of opportunity was fast sliding shut. Aitian's optimism was little short of wishful thinking. If Derm had survived this far, it would be just his luck for the man to make a full recovery. And if that happened, any hope of discrediting Gar would disappear. Derm would safeguard his dead friend's son to the death, even to the extent of protecting that miserable Asher. No, if he was going to strike, seize the throne, seize his destiny, it would have to be soon. He passed a pair of patrolling city guards. They stared hard, recognized him, and nodded their heads politely as they continued on their way. He ignored them. The Baal's garden wasn't far on horseback or by carriage. On foot, it took him over half an hour, and he was sweating by the time he reached the west gate. So much for his bath. The flower-infested patch of ground lay in the city's somnolent religious district. No shops or taverns or restaurants here. Just the sprawl of Baal's Chapel Seminary, hospice and modest accommodation for clergy too old or infirm to continue their religious duties abroad in the kingdom. It was the perfect place for a meeting best kept private. No foot traffic, no inconvenient horses or carriages carrying people who had no need to know his business. All the little novices and Baal speakers would be safely tucked into their beds or on their bony knees by now, praying. He was safe. The Baal's garden had a high wrought iron fence all around it, punctuated with 4 gates, but to the best of his knowledge, they were never shut. He slipped into the grounds through the west gate and waited.
My lord!
My lord?
Frawley, panting at his heels, Pudgy Willer, streaming sweat and stinking of garlic. The reek of it warred with the Baal's garden's sweet winter jasmine, and won. Geralt resisted the urge to press a kerchief to his nose and mouth, and stepped into the faint pool of light cast from a distant glim lamp.
Lower your voice, Frawley, he ordered. Sound carries. You extracted Maester Driscoll without comment?
Sorry, sir. Yes, sir. Nobody saw me take him.
Willer, his expression a distasteful conglomeration of anxiety and eagerness to please, bowed untidily. He was still struggling for air.
My lord, how can I serve you? Frawley said he passed along my message. I'm afraid I don't know any more than that concerning the Master Magician's condition.
Geralt looked down his nose at him. It was a useful technique for intimidation.
Yes, it is your lack of knowledge that brings us here.
The fat little Olkin paled.
My lord?
When we first met, Willa, you gave the impression of a man urgently desirous of saving our precious kingdom from calamity, he said, letting his displeasure show. Yet all I have received from you so far are vague hints, unsubstantiated suspicions, and a list of transgressions that, while they may perfectly illuminate Ash's unsatisfactory character, hardly advance our cause of proving he's a danger to the crown. Can it be I was mistaken in you, sir?
My lord! The little man squealed. I'm doing my best, I swear it, but it's not easy. Ash is so damned secretive.
Geralt allowed his expression to ice over. When you assured me you were perfectly placed to uncover Ash's misdeeds, you were in fact, he stretched the pause to screaming point, exaggerating?
No, no, and I wasn't lying either. I am perfectly placed, my lord, my life on it.
The Olkin protested in a gasp.
It just might take a little longer than we thought, but I'll do it, I swear I'll do it.
Neither my time nor my patience, Willa, are infinite.
Cringing like a whipped cur, the Olkin dared to touch a fingertip to Geralt's sleeve.
My lord, I'm sure I could learn more if only I could get access to Ash's private papers, to his office and all his desk drawers.
You suspect Asher of hiding incriminating evidence in his office?
For a moment the fat man struggled with his reply. Then he shrugged unhappily.
My lord, I can't in honesty say so for certain, but if he keeps it anywhere, I'm sure it's there, or in his private apartments. If only I could get inside when he wasn't around, I know I could find the evidence we require. But he keeps all his doors locked, and I don't have keys. Darren does, but he won't let me.
The flower beds were lined with small round river pebbles, black and white in turn. Geralt stooped and selected one of each colour. Enclosing the black one in his right fist, he whispered an incantation against his folded fingers and waited for the humming buzz against his flesh that would signal the spell's success. A flash of heat, a sizzling thrill, and it was done.
This will unlock any door or drawer, he said, holding the pebble out to his pawn. Use it wisely. I will know where it has been.
With eyes like a greedy child's, the Olkin took the pebble and slipped it into a waistcoat pocket.
My lord!
Next, he enchanted the white pebble and held it out.
This one will give you an hour's feeble glimlight, enough to see by, but not be seen. Wrap it once against a hard surface to activate the spell, once again to turn it off. When you have found what it is we require, throw both pebbles into the nearest well and send to Frawley immediately, no matter the hour. Is that understood?
The white pebble disappeared into another pocket.
My lord, I will not betray your trust, Fat Willa promised. We will apprehend this miscreant. You have my solemn word. The kingdom will be saved.
Clearly he was expecting some kind of response. A compliment, possibly, or a heartfelt declaration of faith and gratitude. Geralt looked at Frawley.
Escort him back to his lodgings by a different route. Avoid the guards and any other late-night pedestrians.
Frawley bowed.
My lord.
Taking the repellent man's black woolen sleeve, he hustled him away. Geralt watched them go. waiting till they'd rounded a corner out of sight, then pulled his own cloak a little closer and struck out for home. Smiling, he allowed a little of Atian's optimism to warm him. Soon, soon now, despite Derm's tiresome attachment to life, he would have Borne's wretched son and the inconvenient Ulken at his mercy. A brief unpleasantness, a minor upheaval, a short period of public mourning, and then a new day would dawn. Bow down, you people of Lur. Make way. Pay homage. Here is your new liege, King Conroyd the First. Daphne propped her elbows on her dinner table and frowned.
I thought you liked my cooking, she said.
She sounded puzzled, maybe even a little hurt. Seated opposite her, Asher looked at the muddle of carrot, spinach, and spicy mince on his plate and pulled a face.
Sorry, guess I ain't got much of an appetite.
She reached for the bread, tore off a fresh hunk, and mopped up her leftover gravy.
What's wrong?
He loved to watch her eat. Such swift, precise movements. All her formidable personality focused on taste and texture. There's a weather working set for tonight. Displeased, she wiped her fingers on a napkin.
If it disturbs you so much, don't go.
Dath, he sighed. Don't.
I won't pretend to like it just because you want me to, she said tartly.
You'd rather I lied?
I'd rather you stayed here.
Aye, well, so would I. But we both know I can't. She pushed away from the table and began clearing the plates.
Won't.
Damn. He'd come here for respite, not reproaches. He stood. I can't do this, Daphne. Not tonight. She beat him to the door, pressed her back to it, and held her palms out.
Wait, wait.
Her hands came to rest on his chest.
I'm sorry. Don't go. Not until you have to. I didn't mean to nag, it's just, I worry about you.
His heart beneath her hands beat hard and fast.
I know. But with any luck, I'll not be involved much longer. Now Derm's turned the corner.
Is it certain? Nix thinks he'll make a full recovery?
He's hopeful.
He watched the doubt shift behind her eyes. Saw her take a breath, ready with more pesky questions he couldn't answer without telling more lies. He stopped her mouth in the only way he could think of. With his own. Shocked, she tightened her fingers on him, clutching at his shirt. He heard her muffled protest, felt her stiffen and begin to pull away. Giddy, he put his arms around her, crushing her close. She tasted of wine and spices and surprise. Just as he thought he'd misread her entirely, ruined everything, she surrendered, became pliant in his arms, kissed him back with passion. When at last they parted, she stared at him, panting. He managed to smile.
Not going to hit me, are you?
Her soft lips curved in a smile.
I should.
For taking liberties?
Aye, probably. Especially since I ain't sorry. He felt his own smile fade then.
Are you?
She answered him with the kiss that stole his breath as completely as he'd stolen hers. Then she released him and reached up to frame his face with her hands. Her eyes were fierce.
I understand why you do it, Asher. Gar's your friend and you love him. But don't let love blind you to danger or lull you into false security. He may be your friend, but he's the king first and he'll not forget that. Don't you forget it either.
Her words cut too close for comfort. To hide his face from her, he pulled her to him in another embrace, sighed as her arms slid around his neck and her fingers ran through his hair.
It's all right, Dath, he whispered. I know what I'm doing.
And hoped she'd believe him. wished he could believe himself. For the briefest, maddest moment, he wanted to reveal his impossible secret. She pulled away, half smiling, half frowning.
What? What is it?
No, it was impossible. To tell her would be monstrous, selfish, unkind, and dangerous. How could he love her and risk her life? He shook his head. Nothing. I should go. Rest up a bit before the working.
Rest here.
Dath, if I stayed, I doubt either of us would get much rest. She punched him.
Speak for yourself. I know what's right and what isn't.
He rubbed his smarting chest. She had a hard fist when she felt like it.
No, I meant that sooner or later you'd start on at me again about Gar and then we'd be brangling, and I don't want to spoil things.
He traced the sharp, clean line of her cheek with his finger.
Spoil this.
Capturing her hand in his, she touched her lips to his knuckles.
You won't.
I know I won't, 'cause I'm leaving, he said. I wanted to see Matt any road. Clear the air after the other day. We've been avoiding each other.
Don't worry about Matt, she said, pulling a face. He'll get over it.
Aye, but I won't. I'm a sensitive flower, me, he said, and laughed when she punched him again.
Ow! See?
She pulled free of him and opened the door.
Fine. Off you go then, Meister Flower.
I'll see you in the morning.
What, you ain't going to walk me out?
I would if you deserved it. He kissed her again for that, swiftly, and let the expression of shy pleasure on her face warm him all the way home, where, since he'd been telling the truth about Matt, he went straight to the stable yard. Matt was still at work, mending a broken bridle in his office. The pot-bellied stove in the corner belched heat and bubbled a kettle on its lid. Asher kicked the office door closed and went to the cupboard, fished out a mug and the tea jar and set about brewing himself a cup. Matt threaded his needle with a fresh length of waxed thread, mute as a swan. He sighed, added a dollop of honey to his tea and said, stirring,
"You told me you weren't in love with her."
"I'm not,"
Matt answered, after a moment.
"Then why does it matter if I am?"
"Did I say it matters?"
Exasperated, he threw down his spoon.
"You didn't have to. It was written all over your face. So do you want to tell me what's going on?"
Still Matt stared at his stitching.
"Nothing's going on."
"Is that so?"
Carefully, he put down his mug.
"Then why won't you look at me, Matt? What are you scared I'll see in your eyes when you say I don't love her?"
Matt did look at him then, stabbed his needle into the ball of waxed harness thread, and stood.
"Nothing. It's none of my never mind, Asher. You've made that clear. Now why don't you go about your business and leave me to—"
A crashing from the stable yard spun him about, last words forgotten. As one, they leapt for the office door. Matt reached it first, wrenched it open. All the horses were jostling now, roused to wickers and kicking by the panicked banging and thrashing in their midst. Matt swore.
"That bloody animal. It's been nothing but trouble. Grab the long line, Asher. I'll need your help."
The grey colt that had hurt itself on the way to Dorana was cast in its stable. As the startled lads rushed downstairs into the yard, hauling on boots and jackets as they came, Matt caught the rope Asher threw him and led the way to its box.
"Stand back, boys," he ordered the lads. "We don't want to panic him further."
Asher looked over the stable door. The colt had rolled up against the wall, legs half folded between belly and timber. It was trapped and half mad with terror. He could see blood already. Horses had killed themselves like this. They didn't have much time. Without speaking, not needing to, he and Matt entered the stable. The colt began to thrash again. He went to its head, held its cheek to the straw with one hand and pressed its neck flat with his knee. Restrained, The colt grunted and groaned, but couldn't move. Swiftly, Matt looped one end of the rope around the colt's front legs, the other around its hind. With the knot secure, he looked across and nodded.
On three. One, two, three!
He pulled, and Asher guided the colt's head and neck, rolling it over and away from the wall. As soon as it was clear, Asher pinned the colt down again and Matt untied the rope. Young Jimmel, always fast on the uptake, slid the bolt on the stable door and held it open just wide enough. Then they threw themselves out of the stable as the sweaty colt lurched to its feet, then bucked and reared and stamped its rage. Safe in the yard, blotting sweat, Matt said,
"Thanks, damn bloody thing."
Asher grinned.
"Me or the horse?"
Matt's answering grin was complicated.
"What do you think?"
They had an audience of goggling stable lads. It was no place for a private, painful conversation.
"I think I need to get going. We'll talk later, eh?"
Coiling up the rope, again, Matt wouldn't look at him.
"If you insist."
Baffled, hurt, he shoved his hands in his pockets.
"You saying there's nowt to talk about?"
Then Matt did look up. His face was weary. Sad.
"I'm saying I doubt it'll make much difference."
Stung, Asher turned on his heel and started walking. Said over his shoulder,
"Aye. Well, don't do me any favours, Matt."
Despite his anger, he hoped Matt might come after him. Call after him, at least. Make some kind of effort. Nothing. So,
sink it.
If Matt wanted to play the sore loser, let him. He had other friends and other things to worry about. Like weather working. Chapter 16. 2 hours later, as the burning magic faded, Asher let his legs fold beneath him and thudded to the weather chamber floor. Through barely open eyes, he watched gentle rain tumble onto the fallow apple orchards of the home districts and snow feather itself over the ice wine region of Fairvale. "Here," said Gar, and held out a cup of Nyx's disgusting potion. Hand shaking, Asher took it and drank the vile sludge of herbs and vinegars concocted to keep body and soul together. His belly heaved, protesting, but he managed to keep it down. Gar reached for him with a damp cloth.
"Now wash your face."
"I can do it,"
he mumbled.
"Don't need a bloody nursemaid."
He could feel Gar's worried gaze on him as he dabbed at his blood-sticky skin.
"You shouldn't try to do so much at once," Gar said. "Olkin aren't meant to endure this kind of power."
He dropped the stained cloth and dragged himself to his feet. He couldn't stand unaided, though. The weather magic still ate him like acid. He shuffled sideways and leaned against the chamber's circular wall, his head viciously pounding.
"I got no choice. Can't afford to spend all night on it. I still got work to do back at the tower."
"Can't it wait?"
"No."
Gar busied himself shoving cloth, basin and potion back in the cupboard, slammed its doors.
"I know this is hard," he said, his voice low. "But what would you have me do? I'm reading Derm's books. I'm searching for a cure."
He pulled a face.
"Read faster."
"I can't. The books are old, Asher, recorded in ancient dialects, obscure codes. If I translate them incorrectly, if I let haste overcome scholarship, I'll make a mistake, one that will kill you or me or everyone in Lur. Is that what you want?"
"I want this to be over,"
he retorted, goaded to desperation. "I want my life back the way it was before."
Gar turned on him.
"Before what? Before when? There is no before, Asher. There's only now, from this minute to the next, holding on tight and hoping the sky doesn't fall on our heads."
Asher stifled a groan. His bones were chalk, ready to snap at the smallest exertion. He'd left exhaustion behind days ago. When we said a month, I thought, that ain't such a long time. I can do that. But now I ain't so sure. Right now, an hour feels like forever. I know. I'm sorry, said Gar. He was stricken with guilt. Look, I'm supposed to draft a new weather schedule soon. There might be some arrangements I can change. Stretch things out a bit, give you more time between workings. You'll have a queue of farmers and such like banging on the door with complaints. Gar frowned. The weather worker's word is law. If I can adjust the rain and snowfall frequencies without adversely affecting the crops... Try, he said. Please? It shamed him, begging, but the magic was breaking him. He could feel the fissures spreading. The gentle shush and splash of snow and rain on the relief map was easing. With a sharp, deep breath, he pushed himself away from the wall, made himself stand up straight. I'll do now. You should get on back. I'll wait a bit, then follow. Gar shook his head. You're in no fit state to walk alone, and we shouldn't risk you falling asleep in here. We'll go back together. It's late enough now that no one should notice. It wasn't a good idea, but he didn't have the strength to argue. Fine, he said. You're the king. And even let Gar help him down the stairs, one arm strong and steady about his shoulders. They returned to the tower in silence. Gar went on up to his apartments, and Asher, reluctant, headed for his office. The worst of the pain and nausea had passed. He was mostly tired now, and light-headed. An hour longer he'd work, and that should keep nagging Darren satisfied. Light spilled from beneath his closed office door. He opened it, and there was Daphne. What are you doing here? You and that damned weather working? I couldn't sleep, she said, apologetic and truculent at once. And there was work to do. I didn't think you'd mind. He came inside and closed the door, shrugged out of his jacket and hung it on the coat rack. No, I don't mind. Good, she said and smiled. Then relief faded as she looked more closely at him. Asher, there's blood on your waistcoat. He looked down. Damn, so there was. It's nowt. Nowt? She came round from behind her desk. Since when is blood nowt? Baal save him, he was too tired for this. Dath, don't fuss. I got a bit too near to Gar when he was weatherworking, is all. I told you it's a bloody business. His bloody business. So how is it you're the one looking half dead? I'm fine, he insisted. She stepped back. No, you're not. There's something you aren't telling me. The hurt in her eyes was like a knife wound. Don't do this, Dath, he whispered. Please. Can't you understand? I've made promises. She was silent for a moment, staring, thinking. Then she moved close to him again and touched her fingertips to his waistcoat, where blood had turned cream to crimson like magic. You should go to bed. You really do look dreadful. He felt dreadful, all his sleeping pains rewoken. Can't. Glossbottle's hearing is the day after tomorrow, and I ain't nowhere near ready. I still got a pile of books to read through and make notes on. Then I'll stay and help, she said, smiling. Two heads are better than one. A tempting offer, but it was late, and his defences were weakened. If she asked him again to confide in her, he might not have the strength to resist. Especially since he was feeling so desperately alone. Dath, she rested her palm above his heart. Let me stay, please. He shouldn't. All right, he said, but only for a while. At her suggestion, they took the books he needed up to his apartment library, which had sofas on which they could comfortably recline. She took one half of the pile, he took the other, and they settled down to reading. Time passed. Soon he forgot about just an hour, and only for a while. It didn't matter that he was weary or that his eyes felt gritty. Scented pine burned cheerfully in the fireplace, and it was so cozy, so domestic, to be sharing silence with her in his private apartment, working. Curled up on the other crimson leather sofa, Daphne sighed, used a finger to mark her place in the book she was studying, and scratched some more notes on the already crowded piece of paper beside her. Her expression was one of grave concentration. The very tip of her tongue poked out from the corner of her mouth as she wrote, and there was an ink smudge on the end of her nose. He felt his heart turn over. She looked up, sensing his regard. "What?" He couldn't say it. Said instead, "I've been thinking. Don't reckon I can do this." "What, preside over the hearing?" She returned to her notes. "Of course you can."
"No, I can't. It's just this whole Daphne. Legal folderol and footling about. I don't understand that claptrap."
She grinned.
"Which is why we're sitting here in the small hours of the night studying when all sensible people are in their beds. Have you finished Tevet's Principles of Jurisprudence yet?"
Tevet's tedious, bloody Principles of Juris Bloody Prudence lay open and abandoned on his chest. The first three paragraphs on page one had given him a thumping headache, and it had gone downhill from there.
"No."
"Asher!"
He pushed the book to the carpeted floor, where it landed with a satisfying thud.
"Can't I just throw Glossbottle and the rest of the Dyer's Guild into prison instead?"
Another grin.
"I'm sure Pellin Auric would love that."
"I know I bloody would," he said, glowering.
A yawn overtook him. When it was done twisting his face inside out, he let his head thud onto the sofa's padded armroll and closed his eyes. Exhaustion was like a blanket of warm snow weighing him down.
"I just reckon the world's gone mad if a no-account uneducated fisherman from Resthaven can sit on that throne in Justice Hall and tell folk he hardly knows what they can and can't do with their own urine."
"You don't give yourself enough credit," said Daphne, her voice coming closer. "Next to our king, you're the most important man in Lur."
She was bending over him. He could feel her soft breath fanning his face.
"I thought you'd realized that by now."
"What I realized, Daphne, is that I..."
Her warm, soft lips suffocated the rest of his sentence. Shocked silent, he lay there drowning in exquisite sensation. After an age, she released him, and he breathed again. He opened his eyes.
"Now who's taking liberties?"
"Me,"
she whispered and kissed him again. Smelling of passion and perfume, tasting of the honey mints she liked to nibble when she thought no one was looking. He lifted his hands to the nape of her neck and unpinned her thick black hair. It fell about his face in lavender-scented disarray. Her fingers were framing his face, holding him, caressing him, shivering his skin and setting it on fire. Even through a barricade of brocade and silk, he could feel her breasts against his chest. All the blood left his head in a dizzying rush, making a beeline south.
"Asher, what is it? You're not enjoying this?" she murmured against his mouth.
"Yes, yes," he whispered frantically. Her fingers tightened.
"Then kiss me back, damn you!"
He was her obedient slave. His arms crept around her back, encircling the fragile ribcage, home to a thundering heart. At last they broke apart, sobbing for breath. Her stunned eyes were enormous, her lips wet and swollen. He pressed his fingertips against them and shuddered as she touched him with her tongue.
"Don't," he groaned,
and captured her hand in his. If you do that again, I might...
What?
She whispered, and trailed her other fingers across his bare chest.
Bare? When had his shirt come unbuttoned?
You know what? Daphne, we can't do this.
But I want to do this, she said, and kissed him yet again. Head swimming, senses blazing, he let himself respond. Let the whirlwind take him, blind him to sense and reason. Her skin was silk and cream beneath his questing fingers. She moaned his name, trembling at his touch. He felt like a king. They slid from couch to carpet, and she fell beneath him, crying aloud as he kissed her breasts, a small shocked sound of pleasure. He stopped, panting.
We can't. We mustn't. We're not married, Daphne.
Her scented skin was damp, her hair the wildest tangle. She smiled.
Then marry me.
Disbelieving, he stared into a passion-blurred face.
What?
There must be a Balsman awake somewhere in this city.
She smoothed his cheek with her fingertips.
Let's go find him.
She was serious. Closing his fingers around her wrist, he tugged her free.
You said you didn't love me.
She wouldn't look at him.
I lied.
Why?
I was afraid.
Of what?
She sat up, buttoned her blouse, her fingers unsteady.
Nothing. Everything. It doesn't matter now.
It matters to me. She touched her lips to his lightly.
It shouldn't. What's important is that I've come to my senses.
Why now?
I realized I could lose you.
Lose me? Her gaze flickered sideways.
Don't tell me you've not noticed all the fond Ulken mamas as you ride through the city. They point you out to their unmarried daughters and tell them to smile as you pass by. You could start a florist shop 10 times over with the roses that get thrown at you on public occasions. There must be 100 girlish hearts breaking in Dorina, all for love of you.
He didn't know whether to kiss her or shake her silly.
Daphne, since when have I noticed fond mamas or their husband-hunting daughters? For one thing, it ain't been nought but work, work, work ever since I got to this bloody place. And for another...
Yes?
Her voice wasn't quite steady.
For another?
Yours is the only girlish heart I'm interested in.
Tears spilled down her cheeks. This time their kiss was delicate, dulcet. When it ended, he folded his fingers around hers.
But it don't mean I can marry you. At least not yet.
Her eyes widened in pained surprise.
Why not?
She was a fiercely bright woman. Married to him, living with him, she'd discover the truth. If things went wrong and he couldn't protect her...
The kingdom's only just out of mourning, Dath.
Engar... Must marry soon himself, she said. Haven't you heard Darren on the subject?
She pulled a face.
Why should the king care if we stand before a Balsman and exchange our vows? Or is he so churlish he'd begrudge you a marriage born of love instead of duty?
Right now, with his own hopes for love and family cruelly blighted, Gar might well begrudge any kind of marriage. And even if he didn't, it would be equally cruel to flaunt happiness under his nose. Something else he couldn't tell her.
Daphne, it ain't as simple as that.
It could be,
she said, and withdrew her fingers from his.
Perhaps you don't love me after all.
He answered her calumny with the kiss that stole all the air from their lungs and left them gasping.
Believe me now.
With her head on his chest and one hand crept inside his shirt to lie against his ribs, she said,
Yes,
but you'll put duty first. Ever since they'd met, she'd been his sympathetic sounding board, his sage adviser, his blunt and brutal mirror. It cut him to the quick, repaying her honesty with half-truths and lies. "I'm sorry," he whispered. She smiled painfully. "Don't be." Bending low, she kissed the ropey scar along his forearm. "I know a little about duty myself." He didn't deserve her. Couldn't believe he'd won her. What a courtship he'd endured. She kissed him again. Soaring, he lost himself in sensation. Kissing was so much better than thinking, or worrying, or trying to come to grips with Tevet's principles of jurisprudence. Who'd have thought a floor could feel so comfortable, or a spare and angular body so soft? Kissing Daphne was a homecoming. Breathing hard, they sat on the floor in tangled silence. Then Daphne stirred. Her fingernails traced circles on his chest, raising goosebumps. "Do you know how we Ulcan married before the Dorinan came?" He rested his cheek on the top of her head.
"No."
"We stood together, witness for each other. We declared our desire to be hand fast and faithful. And we were married."
"Just like that?"
She nodded. "Yes, my love. Just like that."
"My love."
Dizzy, he tilted her head back with a finger beneath her chin and gazed into her heavy-lidded eyes.
"That were a long time ago, Dath. There were reasons things changed."
She pouted.
"I know, I know. Marriages need to be recorded. Babies can't be born willy-nilly. We must never outgrow the land we have here. But I'm not saying we won't ever stand before a Baalsman, Asher. When you think our public happiness won't hurt the king, we can have our marriage entered into the registry. But why should we deny ourselves our private joy till then? If we were any other people, living anywhere else in Lur, we could marry in a heartbeat. I'm sorry for the king's sorrow, truly, but why must we suffer because of it?"
Her words struck a deep chord. Unbidden, buried resentment stirred. Why indeed? He was already sacrificing so much for Gar, risking so much. He deserved something in return, didn't he? Some small spark of happiness. He and Daphne couldn't live together, of course, not at first, maybe not for months. Might only have a handful of stolen moments, like this one. But the moments would be theirs. Joy would be theirs. And in her arms, he could mercifully, hopefully, forget his other, unjoyful secrets. Harsh practicality doused his daydream.
"But what about babies? You know there can't be any babies, Dath. Not until..."
"Hush," she said, and pressed a finger to his lips. "Babies are women's business. Leave that to me. We'll have no babies till the time is right." Relieved, he gathered her close.
"Even married, you know there'll be things I can't tell you. Private business tween Gar and me that can't go further. It don't mean I ain't mad in love with you. I am. Reckon I always have been. But..."
She kissed him.
"I know. I understand.
And we'd have to be bloody careful. There'll be folks around all the time, noticing types like Darren and Pissant Willa. They can't suspect a thing. Can you live a secret life like that?"
Tears welled in her eyes.
"I think so."
He frowned then.
"And you can't tell Matt either."
"Don't worry," she said. "Matt's the last person I'd want to tell."
Jealousy stabbed. "So he is in love with you?"
"No, no. But he'd disapprove. We'd argue. And this is my choice, not his."
She kissed him hard.
"Matt is a friend, Asher. You're the only man who's ever moved me."
The simple declaration stunned him. "You really want to do this?" Her answer was to break away from him. Bemused,
He watched her lock the library door, pad to the fireplace and heave fresh logs into the dying flames, then retrieve a pale gold silk weave scarf from the depths of her satchel. "Hold out your hand," she said. So he did. She sank to the carpet before him and matched his move, palm kissing palm, and laced her fingers with his. Then, frowning lightly, she bound their flesh together with the scarf. He said nothing, feeling giddy, feeling dreamlike. They were getting married. The ritual binding complete, she sat on her heels and considered him. The heat of her hand was like magic in his blood. "I am Daphne Jodhay, a maid of good conscience and unsullied name. I take this man Asher to be my husband and swear to him my love and loyalty until I die." She smiled then. "Your turn." "I am Asher of Resthaven," he replied. In his own ears, his voice sounded breathless. "I'm a man of good conscience and unsullied name, except if you ask Darren or Willa or Conroy Geralt, and why would you? Daphne Jodhay is my woman, my wife, and if anybody looks so much as sideways at her, I'll knock their bloody block off." Daphne was shaking with silent laughter.
"Oh, Asher, you're such a romantic."
"Sink romance," he growled, and pulled her to him hard enough to make her gasp. "Are we married?"
"Oh, yes," she said, and toppled him to the floor. "We're married."
And then there was no more talking, as clothes peeled from flesh like shedding skin, laughing, groaning their mutual needs, hands roamed, tongues touched, fingertips coaxed forth bonfires of delight. Suddenly disconcerted, lost in a wilderness of pleasure, Asher fumbled to a halt. Lifting his lips from her breast, he gazed into her chaotic eyes. "Ah, Dath, you know I ain't never..." More laughter, wicked hands holding.
"It's all right," she promised him, trembling. "Neither have I, but I reckon we'll work something out."
The minute he laid eyes on them, Matt knew. Stepping back into the shadows between the stallion stables and the feed room, watching them creep into the stable yard like conspirators, he felt his heart turn over.
"Daphne, Daphne, what have you done?"
It was early yet, not quite a half hour past dawn, and the lads were only just rousing from their beds. Smeary with sleep, he'd abandoned his own blankets nearly 2 hours ago to check on the grey colt, and stayed up to finish mending that broken bridle. To worry about Asher and the rift sprung up between them that he didn't know how to close. Now his stomach was growling for breakfast, and there was a pain behind his eyes, and all he wanted was hot tea and sizzling bacon, and a moment just to sit and rest and not think about anything. What he didn't want was another argument with Daphne. But now, having